You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the How to Hunt Deer podcast. I'm your co-host, Dan Johnson, and the other co-host over here, Jason Thibodeau from Illinois. Jason, did you have a good fourth?
Yeah, we had a good fourth. We watched a couple sets of fireworks just because of location and time and stuff, because it seemed like people had them on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And we got a little bit of rain, so I think that might have interrupted the fireworks on the 4th for a lot of people, but wasn't sure. So we went Thursday, did that. Friday, we did a breakfast at a small airport that they have every year. Then we went and did a parade and did some more fireworks that night. So it was busy. Pretty busy but pretty relaxing weekend. I went for a pretty decent run. I did a 10K this weekend, and then so that was longest I've run in a while, so that was nice. And then yesterday we got all the bikes out and we all went for a bike ride yesterday afternoon. So
okay, family fun. Yeah, I did something let's see here. What did I do? This week was kind of an odd week for me because all the kids were home. There wasn't a ton of sporting events throughout the week. We had something going on Tuesday. But Friday was the 4th. So all practices were canceled and things like that. So it was a laid back week. I took the kids swimming one day. We did the 4th. We went and watched, we went to a neighborhood fireworks. We went swimming at a friend's pool. We went to 2 different parties on the 4th, and then Saturday and Sunday were baseball tournaments. So my youngest son played in a baseball tournament, and then we just kind of chilled at home. Yesterday we went, my daughter is at one grandparent's, my oldest boy is at another grandparent's, and my youngest boy decided to stay home with us. And so we took him to like a place that's like, they call it the fun station, but it's just like indoor trampolines and monkey bars and things like that, where they can climb all over the place. So it like has mini rock walls. And then we ate a lot, overate a lot, I should say. I didn't do any running this weekend though. So if you asked me to run 5 miles, I'd probably just tell you to go F yourself and then turn around and walk away. I can't do it. Yeah. There's no way I could do it.
Yeah. Have you started your weighted hikes or anything yet or no?
Not yet, but that's coming. That's coming real quick. Also what's coming is, I've just been putting so much energy into my kids' baseball, like not only coaching, but taking them outside of practice hours and like, hey dad, I want to play catch. Oh yes. I've been saying yes a lot during the summer months, during this summer,
just so I can spend as much time with them as I can. Once baseball is over, I'll probably start getting heavy into deer stuff. But my goal this week is to actually get out and set up at least two or three trail cameras. I might be driving 6 hours in one day just to put up two or three trail cameras.
Yeah.
And so I, but you know, when am I going to do it? I got to do it. Weekends are, my wife informed me that this weekend is a landscaping project. So this weekend's out, and we got baseball the next weekend. So now here it is, you know, the last week of July, and I haven't done anything yet.
Yeah.
I haven't even pulled my bow out of the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's actually pretty relatable for 90% of guys.
Yeah, I think it is too. I mean, we actually, the kids and I got the indoor archery range kind of set up now that we got better lighting, which is, it's pretty cool. So last night I shot up there, but I mean, that's the second time I've shot all year. So, I'm feeling it a little bit. I'm out of shape for it. You know, the shoulder's a little weak, just need some repetitions, but I'm starting slowly but surely. Yeah. We've got a two week window here before football really gets kicking off. He's got one more camp towards the end of the month, the third week, and then practice start the end of the month. But a couple of the girls got tumbling, but that's only a day or two a week. So it's not a huge deal. So, I got two weeks, same thing. You know, if there's anything I want to do, it's probably going to be within the next 2 weeks.
Right. I can't believe how fast this summer's gone by already, to be honest with you. We start school in roughly 35, 40 days.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, that's when our school starts and that's when the kids go back to school. So yeah, summer's winding down. I can't believe how fast everything's going.
So you're like stepping in something that I was thinking this morning. I went outside and I was loading equipment for work after the podcast here. And, as I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, it's just really wet and dewy, you know, and it just kind of had that fall smell to it, that early fall smell. And I got thinking, man, it just turned summer, you know, 21st, 22nd turned summer, you know. Why don't they have the peak of summer, the middle of summer, be the longest day of the year? Why is it like the beginning?
Yeah.
That doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah. I don't know. That means the kids would be getting out of school in like April and then going back to school like late July, which would suck, they do it strictly because of heat. I'm guessing.
I think so. I was just thinking like the daytime hours and stuff and enjoying your summer months. And then, you know, you'd actually have a fall that had a change in season, you know, instead of fall is like an early winter instead of an actual fall.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I wish I knew the answers to those things, because if I did, I'd try to profit off of it.
No, that's why I came in and I told her, and she's like, well, I don't know who you need to talk to about that, but it sounds like maybe we need to call the president on that. So,
yeah, let's get, hey, Prez, let me get your ear for a second.
Yeah.
All right. We have a very specific podcast that we're going to talk about today. And just kind of to inform you of how this is going to break down, here are some buzzwords. And we're getting ultra specific about these specific things over the course of, the next 10 episodes. So the next 10 weeks, I mean, that's going to lead us into September. And so we're going to be talking about bedding, transition areas, staging areas, destination food sources, terrain features, and how to hunt in those specific places. So that is what the next 10 weeks roughly is going to look like. And then when we talk about terrain features, each one of those is going to have a specific terrain feature that, you know, we're looking for here. All right. Before we get into this though, we do have to send a huge shout out to our new partner, Code Blue Sense. I still have this box on my desk that I haven't touched. It's literally getting dust on it, and I need to get it out here quickly. And whether I get it out during the end the end of baseball season hit here in July or this week at some point, I'm going to run and set up my trail cameras and set up my Code Blue Scent Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kits. Rope-A-Dope offers, Code Blue offers a variety of real and synthetic deer lures, scents, urines. They offer scent elimination products like laundry detergents and sprays. Like I said, the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit, they have like just a variety of different scents that are used as lures or attractants for deer. They also have the laundry detergent, and that's what I use throughout the Code Blue scents laundry detergent, and that's what I use whenever I wash my clothes during this. So the best thing to do is to get this set up right now, or get these products now, because what typically happens is, and I'm just telling you guys from a buying season perspective, which usually starts in July, August, or September for the hunting industries, nobody waits. Nobody is prepared, so they all wait till the last minute, and then shipping times tend to go up because companies have all of this weight put on them at one time. So get your orders right now and get ahead of the curve, so there is no delay on that, and I'm sure they would appreciate that as well. So CodeBlueSense.com, we do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Jason, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I was just gonna jump in with that. I had moved a rope the other day, and right now I'm using the pre-orbital stuff, but yeah. I really like the I think it's called the rack rub. That's the one that I really like. It's like a syrupy, it's got a swab on the end of it, and you just kind of run it up and down the rope. That's the one that I really like once season starts to get real close here.
Yeah, I got something on my desk. I'm gonna open it and smell it. Yep, that smells like deer. It's called Screamin' Heat, and it's in a synthetic, but it's enhanced estrus stick.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what it does. I'm going to have to do a little bit more reading into it. But then I also have the Gravedigger on my desk, the Gravedigger scented soil with time-released scent. So this is going to go on top of the dirt on the mock scrape that I create. And so when I create that, I'm going to use the whitetail scrape mate, aka the Gravedigger. And so the goal is to set up a couple tree stands, and within shooting distance of the tree stand is a mock scrape that I'll use the pre-orbital gel, the rack rub. Yeah, that's what you were talking, the rack rub.
Yeah. Yep.
And the licking branch gel, and then the scrape mate on the bottom of that, on the ground. So we'll see. And then I'll pair it with a trail camera, and then I'll see what is coming to investigate it. So yep. CodeBlueSense.com, discount code NFC20. Today we start the episode of these really detailed episodes, and we're going to be talking about the thing that I feel, I don't know. Do you feel bedding areas get talked about the most?
I think about, so.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. I think a lot of guys, you know, and this was a big craze. Gosh, I don't know, about the time that the mobile stuff really started to kick off, you know, everybody wanted to get into bedding areas and get close, whether it was in and around doe bedding or bedding areas, or get into a buck bed, you know.
Yep. Yep. Okay. The first thing I want to talk about on bedding areas, I want to talk about timing. Okay. And I want to say time of year. I also want to say time of day. All right. And I think if we can narrow that down, then we can get into the how to approach hunting them type of deal. So time, what are your thoughts when I say hunting bedding areas and time, the best time to do it?
The best time to hunt bedding areas. I mean, to me, it's always been more a pattern thing if I was going to hunt a specific bedding area, you know. So patterning deer, it's easier, I think, either pre-rut, you know, before season really kicks off, you know, you have that summer, they're in beans, they're in corn, so on and so forth, and then you've patterned them off of food, or post-season where, you know, same thing. Late season, you're in the winter and they're on a destination food source, and you can pattern their beds off of where they're eating. That's kind of how I've always looked at bedding areas. I personally have never been a huge fan of hunting bedding areas, just for the fact that I feel like I haven't been able to get away with out spooking deer.
100%. And in a way, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'll go into a bedding area and hunt it, right? But here is how I have hunted my bedding areas as far as time is concerned. Number one, morning hunts, right? If you're going to, like, you can't hunt a bedding area unless you have a terrain feature that hides your motion for like an afternoon hunt. You can't hunt a bedding area in the afternoon if, or unless you have a Loctite access point and a terrain feature that blocks your movement coming in and out of it. And you got to be really, really, really stealthy if you are, you know, if you're able to hunt that. Yeah. Afternoon or mornings is where that's, and that's what I mean for timing. Mornings, hunting bedding areas, you get in there before they get back to their beds. You know, it's dark. You're like, for me, I'm going to give one of my farms an example. I don't hunt bedding areas in the afternoon because the deer are in there. I don't hunt all day. So that means that once the deer are in there, I either have to be in there or I'm gone. I'm done until the next morning. All right. And so for time of day, I just feel like bedding areas are built for morning hunts. You're watching some, you're going to a place where deer are not, and then you come back or you go there as the deer are coming back to bed. Right. It just doesn't make sense to go, I'm going to go there while the deer are there, and that's going to increase the risk of me getting busted. I say that with an asterisk because of what I just mentioned, and that would be unless you have a Loctite access route, you have a tree stand that's already in there, and the wind is in the right spot, and like I can see myself going into a bedding area on extremely high winds.
Yeah.
Because it's going to mask a lot of my noise, but still you're taking a huge risk, especially if you know where deer bed. Hunt the fringes, hunt the other terrain features in the afternoon to get there. But mornings for me is where it's at as far as time of day is concerned.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree. I'm thinking of all these examples I got in my head of properties I've hunted or public land I've been on. And it just seems like, you know, especially in the morning, if your access isn't lock key, you're going to bump deer off of food sources. You're going to bump deer on your way in, you know, whether it's a transition area where they've already made it to inside the woods, you know, you're bumping deer. The other thing with mornings that I would say is a kind of a roll of the dice is, you know, the temperature starts to change, the thermal starts to change. And if your wind is blowing just one direction long enough, I mean, you're bound to spook deer out of beds there. So if it was for me, I'm probably still going to say mornings is the option because afternoon, I feel like deer may change and shift their beds to where they're getting into a better vantage point to where they can actually see overlooking these fields. And overlooking, you know, downwind and everything. I don't know if I can get in as tight as I want to in an afternoon. I probably just say I'm going to go in a little bit earlier than I normally would to hunt a bedding area, and it'd be in the morning.
Right, right. Here is what I have noticed over the course of my hunting career or hunting as long as I have about bedding areas, right? Unless you know where a specific buck bed is and you've seen him go back to this buck bed, or you have trail camera pictures of this buck going over and over to a specific bed, then yes, make a move on that. But when it comes to like doe bedding, there are times, and I say this is a very high risk move, and that is to go into a bedding area in the afternoon. And this is the only time I would hunt a bedding area in the afternoon, knowing that I would bump deer And then also knowing that bucks don't necessarily bed with these doe groups on certain times of year, like early season, maybe even the pre-rut time frame, where the bucks are somewhere else, they're bedding away, and then they come and investigate the doe bedding areas, and then I'm there. The does might not be there because I bump some of them, but the bucks are coming through. But that is a very high risk move, especially when the hunting season is based off of the breeding season. So there's always a chance that a buck could be in there that you're looking for. And that's why it's so high risk.
Yeah. I think that for me, that's a one big thing that I've learned, even if it's setting up trail cameras or making these mock scrapes, specifically hunting, I actually like hunting off of the doe bedding areas more so than like trying to find a buck bed. Specifically just for that fact these deer will start shifting around, they'll start making their scrapes, but it generally always seems to be in, around, or downwind of a doe bedding area. Yeah. And you can go in and you can bump does, and they generally will relax a little bit sooner than what a buck would. You know, a lot of times a buck, it seems like when he's gone, he'll take off and he will leave. But a doe, she's always going to make sure that the rest of them are with her. The fawns are with her, you know, so she might not go that far. The other side of that too is like you get closer to the rut, those does are, you know, putting off estrogen or, you know, their scent and everything like that. And the buck's still going to come in curious of that doe bedding area, and he's not going to be necessarily bedded right there. So if you anticipated him to be a couple hundred yards, say, east of there and you're west of it, I don't know. I mean, roll the dice and hunt that bedding instead of trying to hunt the buck bedding.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is kind of a tough conversation to have with someone who has very limited acres. Like you hunt a 10 acre spot because maybe you have the bedding. Or right. Maybe you don't have the bedding on your your smaller parcel that you hunt on. If you're like us and you have access to more ground, then you're going to be able to identify where these bedding areas are and how they move throughout the terrain over the course of you hunting them. But bedding for me is just kind of going back high level here, is a morning hunt. Typically for me is a morning hunt. Now, time of year here for bedding areas is I probably won't even hunt. I typically don't go into bedding areas. I'm trying to look at all of the tree stands that I hunted last year, and I'm going to guess that I put maybe 5% of my hunts into a bedding area hunt in the morning. And outside of that, it was still a mixture of morning and afternoon hunts, but it was other terrain, like other deer areas. So if I had to guess here, I would say that I spend the least amount of time in bedding areas every year.
That's just me. Yeah, I'd have to almost agree on that. I mean, one of my things that I do probably more now is I'll look for those little micro rubs, and they could be in.
Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting, and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
Large concentrations and generally identify that as a buck bedding area. And the first thing I do is actually get out of it, you know, because if I know that that's where a buck's living is, I don't want to kick him off the property, especially if I have pictures of him and I know what he is and what caliber of a deer he is. And if it's something that I'm going to target, I don't really want to be setting up a stand and in the dark or whatever, and then bump him out of there. Or I don't want to be coming right. in the afternoon and taking the chance of, oh, he's already bedded, and kick him out. Right. Now I have heard that this, you know, all those things work and you can get away with it in certain situations. I've just found, me personally, I'd rather hunt in and around a doe bedding area and take the chances that a buck's going to come in to investigate and see if a doe's ready, if a doe's hot. So I probably focus my time more so on the pre-rut and early stages of the rut of hunting in and around a doe bedding area than I do any other sort of bedding all year.
Yeah. 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 But I mean,
it's not just something you made. It's the privilege that you get to work with your hands. It's building something that serves a purpose. Proof that you have the grit to keep going. At Timberland, we understand you take your craft seriously. And we do too. Which is why our products are built to the highest quality. We put in the work so you can perfect yours. With purpose in every detail and crafted with intention. Timberland. Built on craft. Visit Timberland.com to shop.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
A doe's bedding area is always what I look for, right? But I'm not going in there. I'm hunting the staging areas outside of the doe right. bedding. So, like, I just feel like this. If you're going into where deer live the majority of their life, and that is on their gut, laying down, resting somewhere, right? And I've seen deer stand up, they'll go get a drink of water, they'll come back, find a different bed. And I've watched all this go down throughout the course. And I've watched it early season, and I've watched it late season, and everything in between. I feel like the chances of getting busted are the highest in an area where deer are a destination. Uh-huh. Like, the deer's destination is a bedding area. So that's why I always like to put myself in an area where they're walking by me, and then they maybe slow down in a staging area, but that's not their final destination. They're there for a little bit and then they go. So I'm always trying to figure out, I'm trying to find out, like, where the deer live, where are they going, and then get in between them at some point. And then when I find that out, that is when, during the pre-rut or the rut, I will then go into a doe bedding area in the morning, because that's where the bucks are going to be. So time of year for me is really simple. It's pre-rut. If I'm going to hunt a bedding area, it's going to be pre-rut or rut. If it's early season or late season, I'm not going into a bedding area at all, because I feel I'm going to spook them.
So when guys or you or I have this discussion, we're talking about hunting a bedding area. What classifies or quantifies as a size of a bedding area? Because, I mean, if you go into a property and you see 6-8 beds and you know for sure deer are bedding in there, or are you hanging your tree stand 10-20 yards from that bedding area? Or are we talking a bedding area that's, say, 100 yards by 100 yards, and you're just in one part of that bedding area?
That's a great question. I don't want to be that guy who says this is a bedding area, because that's not the definition of a true bedding area is where deer go to bed. And that can look like 1,000 different things, right? If you hunt a swamp, deer are going to bed in swamps. Deer are going to bed in big pine country, in the mountains, in the farm country. You know, I've seen deer bed on points. I've seen deer bed low. I've seen deer bed high, dude. Like, a doe bedding area is wherever doe beds, doe's bed. But my guess is, and this is what I'm going to say, and this should be a very basic sentence for what I'm about to say. They can smell from behind them and they can see in front of them, right? They have good escape routes where they can just bounce away real easy. I don't feel does are more inclined to do like have the Loctite bedding areas that maybe a buck would have. Like buck, I don't know why, but bucks just, they're different, right? They put themselves in different positions and they're not as careless as a doe would be per se.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I agree with the does to me are a little careless. They are a little more like if you spook them, they will stick around a little bit or they will come back sooner or just come back period. Bucks, I've seen bucks bed in some of the weirdest spots and some of the tightest spots where you've almost had to like step on a brush pile to get that buck to come out from underneath that log even. I don't know. I mean, for me, I guess when I'm asking that question, I guess some of it has to depend on the size of the property. You know, how big of a property are you hunting? And in order to quantify this is a bedding area, yeah, you have to have the beds. Yeah, you have to have the sign that they're actually currently using those beds. I just don't put a lot of weight into hunting beds as much as you hear about, I guess.
Yeah, not individual beds. No, not at all.
No, no.
So here's why I feel does may seem a little bit careless in where they spend their time. And you're like, God, you know, like this, it's not as seclusive. There's more of them, right? Yeah. So a buck has two eyes. He's by himself. He's got to be on point. These doe groups, there's, you know, five deer that's 10 eyes, 10, five noses, 10 ears. And so they rely on each other in order to, catch wind or whatever is in the area. And that's why I feel like they make up for where they bed because of that. Now, going back to your question about what makes a bedding area. And I know a lot of this can differ throughout the course of the country, whether you're in the plain states and there's a very few there, there's not as much cover. The Midwest, the Northeast, the South and swamps and whatever. So I'm going to try to say this in a way that is the best for me. And that is, this is going to sound crazy, where deer feel safe. Right. And that doesn't mean thick vegetation on the point of a ridge. It doesn't necessarily mean in some tall grass along edge in a swamp. It means where deer feel safe. And so where deer feel safe can be places that they don't stick out.
Right.
Right. And so when I go out west, I see these, I don't see them from the road. But when I get into the landscape, there's no trees. And then you see them down in these cuts and you're like, oh God, they bed there because they're not seen. And then they can smell everything flowing in where the wind's coming from. Right. And it's usually matched with a really good thermal. In the Midwest, does are bedding. Like I've seen does bed on the ridgetops in groups where it's thick. And then I've also seen them in river bottoms, where they're right along the, maybe the river takes a turn and the land kind of peninsulas out a little bit and it's thick in there. I've seen them bed there. I don't have a ton of experience with like the Northeast mountain style of hunting and where they bed there, but usually it's a high stem count. It's thick in areas where they can, where they feel safe, man. And it's usually close to water and close to food. So it could be anywhere.
Yeah. So if we said that we got it broken down into a 5-acre chunk that deer are bedding on, and we know that deer smell differently at 50 yards versus 200 yards. Now, if we're able to get within, 100 yards, just say, now we're hunting a bedding area. I guess my question is like when we talk about hunting bedding areas, are we talking about hunting a certain size or certain specific beds? Or so that would be my only thing with it too. Cause if I look at a lot of my properties, I know deer bed on them, So I use either the time of year whether it's rut, pre-rut, going into late season, or I use a travel corridor, a bottleneck, a funnel, a ridge, and that's how I hunt it. But I know that there's deer potentially still bedding there. It's like, you know, it's like I'm still hunting a bedding area, even though I'm not hunting right over a bed.
Yeah. Yeah. I am. Let me put it this way. I feel a lot of people, they see a property line and they think that's where things end and start, but that's not true.
Right.
That's where the story is told, jumping a fence. And it may not, you might not be able to go there, but the deer go there, right? So I think what happens is there's no bedding in my area. Well, there is. If deer are on your farm and it's only 10 acres, well, that just means they're bedding somewhere else. And I know this is very basic, but you have to broaden your horizons and you have to say, this is the deer, this is where the deer live. Now, then the next step is say, this is what I have access to.
Right.
So you don't like just because the deer don't bed on your property doesn't mean the game is over. Right. Oh. And that they live on your property. They're living somewhere else. Then you got to come through. But that's what I'm talking about is just because you don't have bedding on your property, you got to find a way to hunt that farm when the deer are, maybe it's a afternoon only hunt. Maybe it's only a morning hunt. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, when you and I went to Nebraska, you know, I saw like a shift in how the mule deer are moving out there. And this is the same with whitetail too. You know, so when we got there, we saw a deer at the north end of this property and we got about 4,000 acres of public ground to hunt here. And these deer were just transitioning from food to bed, but nowhere in there were they bedding on public ground. But that was the only piece that we had to hunt was in the transition in the morning back to bed.
Yep. Yep. And so we had the opposite problem. We had a ton of ground we could have hunted, but the deer were only where they were on it in the mornings and we can't hunt in the dark. So we had literally for, I don't know how many days, literally we had what would you say? 30 minutes max to catch these deer in the morning.
Right.
Coming off at first light, crossing a road and going, hitting a corner. And I mean a corner of public. And then we had to let it go the rest of the day. I mean, literally then after that hunting was over.
Yeah. For it was done. Yep.
It was done.
It drastically changed, you know, that half hour window drastically changed as the temperatures got warmer because that actually went down the other way, you know, to where we had 20 minutes, 10 minutes and then nothing, you know? So, my point of it is like, sometimes we get wrapped up into like hunting specific beds or specific bedding areas. And I think really we can focus on identifying, you know, bedding areas or beds and then work backwards off of it. Like how close can I get or what's my access look like to that point?
Yeah. 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 So for me, it's just a bedding area is where deer bed throughout the day. Usually if I'm going to put some details on it, it's usually going to be thick. It's going to be in an area where they can't be seen if there is no cover, and then it's going to be close to food and water. And when I mean close to food and water, close in Nebraska, Western Nebraska, and close in Eastern Iowa or Northern Illinois are two completely different things.
Absolutely. Right?
So know that. And man, I don't want to sit here and try to complicate things. It's very simple. During the day, deer are laying on their stomachs and they're bedding, right? When they stand up and start making their way to wherever it is that they're going to go, that's where you need to be.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so, and then in the morning, when there's no deer in the bedding area and you feel like that's your best option, then you're in there. And then you can catch them coming back. But then you know that when it's time to get out of the tree stand, because are you going to hunt all day long? Because if you're not going to hunt all day long, then you have to get out at some point. So not only do you need an access route in, you need an access route out. And sometimes those are two different access routes, especially if the wind shifts, especially if deer are upwind of you or downwind of you, or they're in a spot where you're getting down. I can remember one day I had to get my daughter to, I was south of here. I got into a bedding area because I had seen a buck come out of there the previous afternoon. And so I went into it thinking he's going to show up. And he did show up, but he showed up 100 yards away. And then he followed a doe in and he sat down by this doe at about 80 yards. And my daughter, I had to be out of there because she had a dentist appointment that late that morning. And when I got down, they saw me get down and they ran away. And so I had the opportunity there, but time kicked me.
All right.
So I had to go do this thing. And so, but I was in the wrong spot because my gut tells me when they got up, they were going to go back the way they came to that, you know, to food that night. And so I was at the backside of the bedding area and it honestly didn't work out at that for that one. But that's a learning experience. That's what it should be. So.
Well, And I think that's kind of what to take out of this too. I mean, when we're hunting bedding areas, quote unquote, we need to be able to identify like the time of season and stuff too. You know, if it's a hot day or something like that, deer are going to probably bed closer to water. You know, if it's a cold winter day, they're probably going to bed closer to food. If it's during the rut, bucks are probably going to bed closer to does, you know, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So it's not complicated. If you have interest in hunting bedding areas, be able to identify those things. And good luck with it. I just look at it for me personally. How many times would you want your house broken into? Because, I mean, that's what it is for deer too. You know, if a deer is in an area or deer are in an area, how safe do they feel if people are constantly coming into their bedroom?
Right. And they know,
absolutely. Like
they know where there's what kind of pressure to be scared of and what kind of pressure to just kind of let slide by and maybe move. And so if you have shitty access and you're blowing deer out, that goes for any terrain feature, any area where deer live that we're going to break down here. Like pressure just doesn't happen while you're there. Pressure happens when your sweaty hands are climbing up a tree stand and then you leave and an hour later a deer comes by and they're like, okay, I don't feel comfortable here.
Right.
And their personality may go, okay, well, I don't like this. I'm going to sniff around a little bit more. Okay. It looks safe. I'm going to go. And then there's the sniff around and I'm out.
Well, and I'll take it a little bit further too with, you know, especially on public ground, or I'll go to the private ground that's shared by multiple people. You know, I think we get kind of lackadaisical in thinking the fact that for some reason we're not pressuring the property. It's only the other people that are pressuring it. You know, I feel like we all go through that transition of like finally realizing that, hey, I've been here 5 times in 10 days. Like maybe I'm pressuring it too.
Yep. That's 100%. 100%. You are pressure. I don't care who you are. Like you are, I don't care if there's one other guy and you think he's the reason for it. You're the reason. You're part of the reason anyway. So, okay. I wish there was a more specific about what does a bedding area look like. I'm trying to think of a specific example, like big ridges in big country. Deer like to bed on the points in this terrain. They like to bed in areas where the wind is coming off a majority of the land, and they have good scent to their back. Like they can catch, so they're going to use their nose and then eyes to look downhill and eyes to look out. That's one. Points in fields, like right now, as soon as this would be more of an early season bedding area where the crops are up and they can bed in these grassy points or these timbered fingers that lead up to the field. And usually that correlates with a low spot. In the field. So if they are that close to the field, they stand up, they can stretch around, they can look around. Usually there's always some historical sign there. If there is like a rub or maybe a scrape, if it's just grass, then, you know, good luck trying to locate. Maybe you can locate some trails or some beds or some droppings there. And then I've also seen deer on extremely windy days just bed in low spots where they are facing low and they may be at one of the lowest spots, and all of the wind and thermals are sucking down into one point in the lowest spot. So they can get a, they can use their nose to get a big whiff of anything that's coming through a pretty large area of ground. And then they can see anything flat, you know, that's coming, that's there. So I've seen that happen as well. Of course, you're going to have your traditional big, thick bedding. Like, it's going to be thicker. Usually it's going to be up against maybe a tree. Man, it really is crazy, because for every scenario that I can give you an opposite scenario of where a deer has been bedding that just kind of blows my mind. Like, I'm like, I go, are you serious right now? Like, what, why is he bedding there? It goes against everything that I've learned against how deer behave, and they're in those spots too. So I, like, the only way you, the listener, can find that out is by to get on your property and hunt a lot of years, right? Honestly, that's it.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
I agree. I mean, it took me a long time to realize what the terraces and fields were, you know, and finally realizing that deer use those as travel routes, but they also use them to bed in. And if you take the time, if you're doing, you know, summer glassing or whatever it is, you'd be surprised how many deer you can glass up just bedded in those terraces. And there's no trees most of the time. It's just tall grass. So,
yep. Okay. So again, these are hypotheticals, and now we have to talk about how to actually hunt a bedding area. Okay. We've kind of, I talked a little bit about what a bedding area is. Now, how do we hunt them, Jason?
I mean, for me, like I said, if I'm going in after, I'm going to go with the buck first. If I'm going in after a specific buck and I've identified where this buck is living, you know, I see multiple rubs, could be clusters, so on and so forth. I'm actually probably going to be set off of it, not very close, and just so I can view it, you know, so I can sit there with my binos and I can watch that deer. You know, I'm going to come in early, probably an hour before, at least get in my stand, get settled down, and have an hour before the deer or before sunrise. And then once I am able to pick up my binoculars, locate the deer that are moving in, watch his bed. Yep. And then I'm in between his bed and either a water source, a doe bedding area, or a destination food source. One of those three things, that's where I would put myself.
Okay. That's cool. That's fair. Now, outside of that, access wise, like, is there a, like, in relationship to where a bed or where a bedding area is, are you coming into it low? Are you coming into it high? Are you coming into it from a flanking position? Like, that's level. Like, what's your, how are you usually doing it? Is there a magic recipe?
To me, there's just so many variables that go with it, because a lot of the properties that I love to hunt during certain times of the year, you know, it just depends on if crops are in. You know, this year, one of my favorite properties has corn surrounding the entire thing. You know, so my access is actually pretty good. You know, I can come in from different angles, different winds. I've learned on certain properties where I park my vehicle matters, you know, so that is part of your access, starts right there, is where you're parking your vehicle, where you are leaving from. If I can use a creek and have the creek flowing in my face and access in that way, I think that's a great option as well. But yeah, it just depends on the time of year. It depends on if, you know, does are in estrus. It depends on if there's food source in and around the property I'm hunting. So for me, yeah, it does vary. I have multiple access points, multiple stand sites. I just know where not to go. You know, like I said, I personally just don't like to barge right in.
Yeah. I don't like to barge in either, except if I know, and then I take the risk. Right. And so I'm going to just go with what I know. And so if I'm hunting a bedding area, I'm assuming that the deer are not there when I'm going in. I'm just assuming that. I've been busted so many times in bedding areas in the dark, or like I'm trying to find my tree where I have my tree stand, and I find it, and then I'm walking into it, and what do I see? I see eyes, right? I see eyes reflecting in my headlamp, and I'm like, okay, well, that buck or that deer, whatever it was, isn't there. And then I get up in the, you know, I get up in the tree, and then usually what happens is it all calms down. They're not too terribly spooked. And then I just watch the deer come back into these areas. So my favorite thing to do, and a lot of it has to do with where you park, where your access is. I mean, I have places where I come up and get to a spot, and then my wind is blowing on top of my access route. And then I have times where I have my back to the wind as I'm accessing the stand in the bedding area. And then my goal actually is when I get there to climb up, and my access route isn't that where the deer are going to be. They might cross it, but while I'm in the stand, my scent is blowing over top of a corner of the bedding area, if that makes sense. Yeah. So my scent, like, if I have a good thermal pull up, when the sun comes up in the morning, hits me, and my thermals are going to start to rise, and you match that with a wind direction that blows over top of the low terrain, that to me is perfect. That is what I want. And usually what happens is, if I can get that, then I also get the deer being able to pass close to me without knowing that I'm there, because I got a thermal pull that's going up. So if I had to choose between how I access, and if I can access, like you have 360 access and it's not up against a landowner that you don't have access to go through their property, and you have to only go through a specific area, I always try to access a bedding area high to low, usually with the wind in my back, so that when I get up in the tree, again, the scent is blowing in a direction where I'm high enough, the thermals are going to hit when the sun comes up. My thermals are going to hit. Now, if it's a cloudy day, you may not want to do that. Or if it's a day where thermals are going to be dropping because there's no sun, or it's like a misty day, your thermals are going down, then taking that approach may not be the best area. And so, or the best idea. So it really depends on what the access route actually is. But I personally like to go start high, then go low into the bedding with myself higher than where the deer are going to bed, and not necessarily at eye level or above me, if that ever makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I just think for me, it's one of those things, like I just tend to go easy in on it and let the deer just be for a while. And then there's that point where it could be middle of November to like Thanksgiving time frame. Then that's when I kind of get a little bit more aggressive. And then that's when I say, all right, now I'm actually going to push the envelope a little bit and I'm going to go in. I just personally have not had a ton of luck hunting in a specific bed or around a specific bed.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, there's that. I'm not an individual bed type of guy. So outside of that, I am that guy who I like to find where they're at. I like to maybe do an observation hunt. I like to put maybe some trail cameras in there. I like to use previous years' data. And then outside of that, it's all on you to make the right decision of where, like how to hunt that specific bedding area. I'm like, again, I don't want this to sound like this is how you do it, because I don't hunt your farms.
All right.
Right. There's a lot of people out there who will tell you this is how you should do it, and then they're going to give you a blanket coverage advice, and that's not true. Do not listen to those types of people, right? You have to put in the work and do the woodsmanship portion of this to know what thermals are doing, to know what the wind is doing. And hell, there might even be some times where you can get away with murder in these bedding areas because you have such a lock-tight access route. And the better your access routes are, the more you can hunt a specific stand location. If deer movement is, I don't know, upwind from you, and you have downwind bedding, that's just, or downwind access, and a big terrain feature that can hide you, there are spots that I have that I know I can get into way more times throughout the course of the year as opposed to anything else. So outside of that, any final words on bedding areas that we need to talk about today?
I would just say that if you're have interest in hunting these bedding areas and stuff, you know, deer are going to bed in good spots, and they will do that yearly. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, a good food source. It'll be there yearly, you know. So once you identify a bedding area and you're able to identify a bed, then I would just be able to identify whether that bed is active and fresh. And then if you have interest in hunting beds, I mean, share it with us, dude, because I think that's pretty interesting. If you can get away with it and you have that Loctite access, and if you're hunting a specific buck, I think that's pretty cool. So
right yeah. All right, so outside of that, I'm going to give one quick little tip tactic type of deal, and that is that it's okay to not hunt a bedding area. All right, maybe you're the guy who just likes to go crazy and you want to hop in there and you want to get the job done. Great, go for it. One thing that I like to do is I like to put a trail camera in a bedding area, maybe on a good trail where two trails cross, or maybe even over top of a bed where you think there's going to be deer movement. And I just put that trail camera there and I don't even touch it. If I don't have like a cell cam, and because I hunt a river bottom farm that there's no cell service down in the bottoms. And so I just put a trail camera in there and I forget about it until March when I go to shed hunt it. And then I'll go in there, I'll pull the card, and I use that information for the next year. Right. So get the information. And sometimes it's a long game and it's not a short game deal. I like to use all the information that I have. And sometimes that takes a year to get it. And so you get that information and you're like, okay, now I have a little bit more knowledge about this area, about this farm, how these deer move. And I'm going to use that for the next year. So, great conversation today.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason. If you have, I mean, the How to Hunt Deer podcast, we've been around for a long time and we've been talking about things like this, especially on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast as well. So listen to more than just me, right? I know that there's people who are just diehards and they only want to listen to certain types of people. My idea was, if you really want to become knowledgeable about this, listen to the ideas that people have that are more than just me and Jason, more than just somebody else. If this is the first time you're ever listening to the How to Hunt Deer podcast, man, welcome. Go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple Podcast, whatever, from most places. And if you do have any specific questions, hit myself or hit Jason up, and we would love to, you know, have a quick conversation with you about thoughts and ideas and things like that. So good vibes in, good vibes out. Jason, have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.